Senior Focus.
Good afternoon. This is Alex Bonham on Senior Focus, filling in for Anne-Marie Curie. And with me today is Emma McInnes, who trained up as an urban planner, but has now been diverted by community work. Welcome, Emma.
Thanks, Alex. Nice to be here. But community work, but also I'm a full-time mama as well, living in Waterview, so that takes up a lot of my time as well. And yeah, I just sort of thought I'd rather be being a mum than doing the planning work that I was doing. And I was like, how can I make this lifestyle work but still give back to my community? And so, yeah, I've been doing a real range of very local projects, and a lot of them I can take my daughter with, daughter too. So, yeah, it's been amazing. I'm very lucky.
Oh, that sounds good. So Emma and I have known each other for a while now, a few years, and I met Emma when she was working in Women in Urbanism. I was busy putting chalk marks all over the streets of Auckland to try and encourage the planners, the powers that be, to make it a bit more child-friendly. And I met this guy in the street who said, you should really talk to Women in Urbanism, that they do this sort of thing.
Who was he?
It was a guy called Kent Lundberg.
Oh, my favourite.
Yeah, honestly, if you want to meet people in the street, just do something a bit odd. And people will ask what on earth you're doing, and then you end up having really good conversations. So that's what happened. And so I joined in with Women in Urbanism. Now, why did you set up Women in Urbanism, Emma?
Because I didn't want to get coffee for Kent anymore. No, I'm just kidding. it was really, as someone who was working in a transport planning agency, I didn't actually get to see a lot of other women that were in our industry. It was, felt very male dominated, even though it was a very cool workplace and, you know, very progressive, and lovely people. There wasn't a lot of women that I was working with, and I wasn't really convinced that there were many women within our industry either, because I hadn't seen many of them. So my friend Abigail Granberry and I, we were like, oh, we've got to start a network. There must be others, and we're all going to be in this together. And, you know, if we can network within the industry, we can further some of our, like, more, you know, feminist ideas towards city planning. But also, you know, if we're doing that work within the planning industry, then hopefully in turn communities will directly benefit from the work that we're doing in transport planning and planning in general. So I feel like it's a really long-winded way to say that. But basically, we noticed that, one, there was a real gap of women in the industry, in transport planning.
How many were there?
And, well, there was very, very few, like, women in engineering. I think, like, 14%. It probably still is a little bit around that. Same with sort of transport planning.
Were you the only woman in your office?
Well, there were two, three women in my office at that point. And that is actually not including the person who held our whole company together, our administrator. So, you know, we just didn't really see a lot of other women. And every now and then you would be still asked to go get the coffees and still go asked to bring the water to the meetings. And we were like, oh, this is 2018. This feels a little bit...
That's annoying.
It's quite old school. But you know, that's not because why they weren't a lovely workplace. It's just like, that's just the default everywhere. And then I started talking to my colleagues in my office about it, and they're like, oh, we did actually meet this awesome woman in transport, and she was in AT, and oh, we should get together with them. And I know someone else in NZTA that would love a group, love for a little network like this. And then we just basically had our first event, and we got 30, 40 women sort of just kind of come out of the woodworks, and some of them were in advocacy and some of them were actually in the planning profession or in transport planning or in architecture or engineers. And so we knew that we had there was a need for a little network there, some shoulders to lean on. And and we knew that if we set this group up and we also had very, you know, progressive ideas about how cities should look and that they should be designed, you know, with women in mind, with children in mind, with seniors in mind, with those who have disability in mind. And we'd noticed that in our work that just wasn't happening enough. So this network gave us a place to have a talk about this. And then we realized if we set this network up, this body, we can both empower women within our industries to go further or to, you know, back each other and back each other in some of these ideas to see these things change on paper in front of us and in the boardrooms that we're in, to directly benefit the women in our communities, to directly benefit, you know, the woman or the persons who have a disability or are pushing around a pram or, you know, you're at the playground and there's not enough shade sales and I'd be the person behind, you know, creating that park or that playground just might not have thought that kids play in the middle of the day. And so, you know, it's just basically an advocacy body to look at city planning through that gendered lens. But really it's an equity lens because it's not just about gender.
Yeah, it's not just about gender, it's about disability and age.
Yeah,
all sorts of other things.
Absolutely.
So you did that for a number of years. What sort of impact do you think that work has made? I know Women in Urbanism is still ongoing, but you've stepped a little bit away from it now. But what are the things that you're most proud of help getting over the line or shifting?
Well, I think the conversation, because it just wasn't really happening. And a lot of our male colleagues at the time were really awesome and really open to it and were like, yeah, we totally support this. Oh, we never thought of this. Okay, we'll do this differently. And so we really just started quite a massive conversation, not just within Auckland, but I think definitely in our other cities, in Wellington and Christchurch, for example, where, you know, Women in Urbanism was starting to be invited into meetings and included because they wanted our perspective on how this park was going to be built or this cycleway or this busway, or, you know, they wanted our input and they wanted us to, give us sort of, they just wanted some ideas about user experience too, because obviously they just had not been talking to that point, up until that point, to people who use cities differently. And I say this because it is very well known that a lot of the way that we design our cities is based off, you know, the average man, you know, he's middle class, he works 9 to 5, he's usually Pakeha, and he goes into the city for work and comes home again. And actually there's a whole bunch of different types of people that use our cities, and it's not okay to just design for that one type. You can see it in the way that we design our public transport systems, where they're really focused on,
you know,
the commuter and the trip into town and back home again. They're not focused on those, you know, crosstown trips or those trips that are made throughout the day. And I remember when I had my daughter, I spent a lot of time leaving the house, probably more midday than when the commuters were on the way to work. And of course, the frequency of the buses is a lot slower at that time of day. But it wasn't just me. I'd look around, there were a lot of other mothers. There were a lot of seniors doing their grocery shopping at that time. There were lots of different people using the bus throughout the day. And it's just like, again, all the attention is put on the commuter.
It's true, actually. And interestingly, research around the world has shown that public transport rideship has come up far more quickly on cities designed around children and shoppers than commuters.
Yeah.
Because it's just so much more useful if you have a system that looks after all of your life, it not is. Just 2 journeys a day.
And because women typically are more likely not to own a car, and of course children don't drive. So if you can get them on a bus, you can make it easy for them to use a bus, of course they're going to help your ridership numbers. It's useful to them as people who don't drive. But I was going to say women are more likely to take crosstown trips. We do this thing called train training, that's the one, where you're more likely to do more than just one trip. So you might drop your kids off at school, but then you might go to the supermarket and then go to work. And then you go pick your kids up and you take them over to swimming or sports. And I'm not saying that men don't do that. I'm sure there's plenty of great partners, great fathers that do those roles. But on the whole, it's still women that are mostly doing that work. And it's not just with kids. They're doing the caregiving work for for elderly people as well, for the mums and the dads.
And vice versa, actually. It's huge, the number of older people who care for their grandchildren.
Exactly, yeah.
Through the day, and being able to get across town, mm-hmm. get to the other house, plan a whole day, have a successful day, get back home. You know, these are all big things.
I was really fortunate to have Oma and Opa come and look after my daughter for 3 months last year. And, you know, they took the bus everywhere and they loved the bus. But, you know, there were a lot of, like, problems with the frequency of the buses during the day for them, which made them, like, late to certain kids' classes. And they take a little while to shuffle across the road with my daughter, so I was always thinking about, oh my gosh, how are they going to get across that massive arterial? Like, she's slow, they're slow. But our pedestrian signals are traditionally, they speed through them pretty fast, and so they're not really thinking about, you know, the way that, you know, different people walk and move around our city. So, yeah, those things used to play on my mind while I was working.
Yeah, that's true. Well, I think the conversation was helpful, but I also think that the recent win around Kerangahape Road to make it more pedestrian focused, I think we've had some wins, I think, in improving access for all. And it'll be interesting when the CRL opens. We'll see what happens then. But you have put your urban planning life a little bit behind you, not entirely, but you have a bigger focus at the moment around community activities.
Yeah.
Tell me about that place that you went to in Scandinavia and why it made an impact on you.
Oh, yeah. So this was in 2018. My partner and I traveled to Copenhagen and we came across Absalon, which was a big, beautiful church that no longer had the parish required to keep it going. So they gave it instead to the community to use. And now it's quite long-standing now, been a place where, you know, there's free yoga through the week. They have massive, like, community dinners. There's ping pong. There's parties, you know, dance, art festivals. All these wonderful things happen. It's basically, it's a community hub. So it's still serving its purpose in some ways, like as a church would have once been an anchor and a community anchor in Copenhagen. But now it's really open to all of the community. And like, this was just at a time where I think a few of those, that model wasn't completely new. I knew there was a few around the world that were doing that. But it made me, when I came home, it made me really want to see something like that started here. I just wanted to participate in one. And we have some excellent community hubs already that kind of do a very similar thing. But nothing with that church model, which was really interesting to me, where it was, you know, these are old, beautiful buildings that just do not have enough money and enough members of the parish to really support it to keep going in its community. And so I happened to find one like that, and I found one in my own community, which was really lacking social infrastructure and, you know, spaces for people to connect.
So where's this? Where?
This is Waterview, sorry.
Waterview.
Yeah, good question. Waterview is such a great neighbourhood. I honestly think it is the best one in the world.
Your world,
but not just my world, no. All of our worlds. It's so great. But yeah, it is really lacking like a little a centre for the community to really, you know, do their thing, hold their events, hold birthday parties, hold free workshops, hold repair cafes, do all the beautiful things that I know are happening in other places across Auckland city.
So it's sort of serving as the community centre.
It is.
Would that be fair?
It is the community centre.
Because there is no other community centre, so it has become the one.
Mm-hmm. But it's really run by the community, for the community, but, you know, in collaboration with the church and with the support of the trust. Thank you, the trusts.
So is it still officially a church?
It is still officially a church.
That's a very, very good plan, because if it's not a church, it has to pay rates. So keep it as a church. just because, I know that St. David's a church in Khyber Pass has reinvented itself as a centre of music, and it's a stunning place. But now they have to pay rates. It becomes harder to deliver what they want to deliver. So you're doing very well. Well done. Good structure.
Thank you.
So tell me about just a little bit more about how that can bring different generations together.
Yeah.
Where is it?
Oh, where is it? Yeah. So the Waterview Methodist Church is on Great North Road in Waterview. And the actual hub part, we use the hall, and they've got a beautiful hall with a little stage and, like, you know, red velvet curtains, and they've got a lovely big kitchen and an amazing outdoor space. And we're going to be holding lots of activities over there, especially for the next 10 months. And things like yoga, which is really for all ages. So the free yoga on Tuesdays, 5 to 6. We've been getting all ages. So there's that kind of like opportunity for people to sort of come together, connect with those in the neighborhood that you might not have met before, but of different generations. And we would definitely be doing things very targeted towards our seniors and towards our kids. As a mum, I know all too well what it is to have to pick the kids up around 3 p.m. And then there's that, you know, 2-3 hour time before you have dinner, and you're like, oh, what are we going to do? And so, how do I keep myself awake? And so the hub is going to serve as a place, you know, do some arts and crafts in the afternoon. We'll have people leading that. But yeah, we'll have, you know, repair stations, repair cafes, and do things such as like knitting groups, but also we've got actual, like, I can't really tell you exactly which groups yet. We're adding to our calendar, but groups which, you know, focus on activities for seniors will be coming to participate and put on things as well. So yeah, we just really want to make sure that they're especially have opportunities to come use the hub and use it for free. We don't want to charge anyone to, because it's such a barrier having to pay to like use a hall. And so we wanted to give the community to something that there was no barriers. It's completely free.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. It makes it just so easy to just go, oh, that is where I'm going to hold my event. And then you don't have, everyone can just walk there or cycle there too, which is exactly what they did on the weekend when we held our hub launch. There's no need to drive to your local hub. You can just walk or cycle there too. So yeah, we really want to make sure that we're supporting that environmental angle to it as well. Keep it super local.
Okay. Just in case you've got some people who need a car because they might be older or have disability issues, is that possible to park there at all, or
absolutely
you just have to get your Uber out?
Yeah, if you need to, it definitely, like, that you'll be prioritized, you know. And it's a really accessible church too. Got big beautiful sweeping ramp up into the church, which was something that I was really excited about, because I know a few of the community centers that have used old buildings have had real trouble with the accessibility side, because it's, you know, very expensive to put a ramp in, but the church already had this amazing accessibility feature put in. So so absolutely prioritize for seniors. They can come park up there, absolutely. But for the rest of us, we shall walk, we shall bike, and we shall scoot.
Absolutely. Oh, that's so cool and awesome to hear about having free access. How would people find out about it, about what's going on?
Oh, at the moment we just have a Facebook page, or we do have an email too, but the Waterview Community and Enviro Hub, and then, oh gosh, what's the email? Let me bring out my phone and I can do.
Excellent.
Hold on.
So the Facebook page is for Waterview Methodist Church?
No,
the Waterview Enviro Hub.
The Waterview Community and Enviro Hub on Facebook, and our email is waterview.communityhub@gmail.com.
Oh, brilliant. So people could
get in touch. You can get in touch to book, or you can get in touch to find out what we're going on and come along to one of our free events. So,
yay!
And we want people to come with their good ideas and decide to hold a workshop on this or that, and I don't want to predetermine what those things are going to be.
So if you've got good ideas, get in touch as well. And you might be connected up to somebody else or a group. That's very exciting. I'm really interested in how different cities have been able to foster intergenerational activities and contact. And I think there's a huge value for younger people. I heard about a young family. They were a migrant family. They were from Germany, and they advertised for a grandmother, a German grandmother who lived in Auckland, who could perhaps provide some of the German grandmother roles that their own ones couldn't because they were still in Germany. And I think they were successful. So that was tremendous. And at Auckland University last year, I was working with a bunch of students, and they were trying to fill a gap with the design project. And what they designed was a mobile home or caravan that was fitted out with various craft activities, and it would be manned by a few older people, and then students who were feeling lonely and missed their grandparents could come in there and do some knitting or crafting. And I think there was some woodwork going on as well. But the main point was just to be able to have a bit of a conversation with someone coming from a different lived perspective.
Yeah, I mean, well, firstly, we should be designing our cities so that, you know, if your kid wants to still, after 18 years of living with you, still wants to live in the same area code as you, that they should be able to. So, you know, I really... Yeah, the idea that Luna would one day move away from us and Waterview because it would be too expensive for her to find a home there, and then have to go to a different part of Auckland or even, you know, overseas is
it makes me really sad. Well, you know, I think it could go either way. I also suspect that the cost of housing will mean that our children will live with us until they're at least 30, which will be delightful. And you never know, we might have all three generations in one house.
And also we might not like that. But, you know, and that's, and you know why we might not like that? Because our houses are not designed for intergenerational living. There would be overcrowding. There are some fantastic models of intergenerational housing, especially in those Scandi countries. God love those Scandi countries. I don't necessarily know that we have a few good examples here in New Zealand, but, you know, nothing of scale. That I can think of, unless maybe we're counting somewhere like co-house.
Let's count co-house.
Yeah, although I don't know any families that are actually living in there in a multi-generational way.
I don't know families that live in there in a multi-generational way, but I do know of families living in a community that is multi-generational and enjoying the benefits of it, and older people who are too, and that it seems to work for a lot. And I'm glad that they're, you know, going for round two, as it were, because of the interest in being involved in that sort of thing. Would you consider?
Oh, it's that. I would love to, but it's too expensive.
Is it really?
Yeah.
How much does it cost?
Oh, yeah, too much.
Too much
for the area that you get. But and also, I like Waterview. I don't want to move anymore. I'm so obsessed with Waterview. I've actually become. Yeah, I become a Waterview patriot. Like, I can't move from there, sorry.
You're stuck now.
I'm stuck, yeah, I'm stuck. I'm in...
Greylin versus Waterview wars have begun.
No, I definitely wouldn't go to...
Friendly rivalry?
You guys wouldn't want to go to war with us, trust me. No, but seriously, like, we do not live in a city that is supporting that multi-generational living, like being able to live close to the ones that you love in, you know, a neighbourhood, and I'm sure that's not the case for everyone. That
Give me an example of a city that's doing it better.
Well, that is a good question, but I do believe that, like, Scandinavian cities are the good example of, like, where they can do that better. Like, their kind of co-housing models, they've got a lot of different co-housing models, and some of them are based a bit more on affordability. So if you want to live, you know, downstairs, near your parents, it's, like, much more easy and accessible to do. But at the same time, I do feel like just generally we've moved away from that idea of the village, like, everywhere. I feel like I'm a good case in point. Like, I cannot afford to live near my parents, but I would love to. I would love to be able to live next to them. But like they're in Whangarei, right? Or they own a farm. Farming was not particularly something that I saw myself doing later in life, and so I had to move to the big city to move to get, you know, to do what I needed to do to fulfill my dreams. And that has meant that I don't really have my little village around me. And the way that we've designed our cities, the way that we've designed, you know, Auckland City in particular, doesn't really support me to, like, have a family as well. Like, I'm lucky that I've got a few good friends dotted around me, but I have to be very, very intentional about finding them and asking them for help. Otherwise, it does feel like we're alone a lot of the time, my family and I. But I grew up in a multi-generational, on the farm. Like, I had my grandparents, and then I had my parents, and then I had me. So I was literally surrounded by the village, and it was so nice. And I was always so safe and so supported. And now, you know, my daughter doesn't quite have that, and I don't have that, and I need that as a mum with a young daughter. And I really don't believe that. Like, I know I've seen some Aucklanders that are very lucky to live with their parents in the next suburb over or in the same suburb as them, but, like, that really isn't the reality for a lot of people.
Yeah, no, it's a real privilege when you do. My in-laws live in Auckland, and it's just great having their support. But I think that there are some ways, and I love what you're doing at the Enviro Hub.
Yeah.
And to find and create your community.
That is exactly what,
and make it happen. There was one story that you told me before we came in here, which I just loved, about school buddies. Do you want to tell me?
Listeners? This was an example of where, because obviously we're not all going to be able to live right next to our parents, but there was a school in Sydney, Glenwood Public School, and a lot of the children there were actually a lot of immigrant children, and so they didn't have their grandparents living near them in the same suburb or even in the same country. And so the school teamed up with the Widden Eastern Park Nursing Home, I believe, and started the scheme called Grand Buddies. So where the kids paired up with the seniors in the nursing home, and, you know, then the kids kind of got they got a grandparent. But they did build really, really good, really authentic relationships with the seniors there, and the kids really, really cared for them. It was so much deeper than just, like, you know, having cute kids running around a nursing home. One of the children, like, identified that their grandbuddy had Parkinson's but had a deep love of playing chess and could no longer play chess. So he literally rebuilt a chessboard game. He used 3D printer, and he made it, you know, supersized it and just made it much more, usable, user-friendly for the man with Parkinson's. So he designed him basically a Parkinson's chess set. I've heard of a lot of schools doing these kind of buddy systems, but I've never heard it ever go to that kind of level. Those are the kinds of things that I would like to be seeing happening in my community, where there is not just like a tick box, like, let's, you know, join the kids and the seniors for a day, but, like, really getting to know one another and trusting people in your neighbourhood. And we talk a lot about, you know, all the crime that's on the rise in our neighbourhoods, and I know that, you know, it's actually this kind of social infrastructure, these kind of, like, clever little interventions where we're building really real, meaningful and deep trust with people, that's gonna bring people together, and that is gonna do things like, you know, lower crime, lower loneliness,
build some social cohesion,
build social cohesion, absolutely, and
moments of joy,
and the moments of joy and the play, and that is what I really hope comes and vibrates out from this community hub.
That's so cool. That is so cool. I think we're running out of time, but really appreciate you coming in today, Emma. Thank you so
much. Oh my gosh, I too. Thanks for having me, Alex. Always happy to come back and knit more.
Oh, excellent. We'll make it happen.
Get together. together with Senior Focus next Sunday at 5:25 p.m. on Planet FM 104.6, or listen online at any time at planetaudio.org.nz/Senior Focus. And do note, Senior Focus is one word.
On air, online. Okay.